Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. It feels so good to say that. I'm Rick, he is Dan, and the legend Brian Snow is also on the line. Gentlemen, how are we?
We're good.
Dan, you're in what beautiful city right now on a cell phone?
Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm in a hotel room that smells like feet.
Nice.
What I would say about this hotel is that it has a really strong odor of feet, which is, it's not what you want, but it's what you get.
Yeah. So there you go. We apologize for the sound. If Dan sounds a little worse than usual, he's not on his typical device here. So, anyways, Xavier played an exhibition.
Wait, hold on a second.
What?
I usually sound like I'm recording the podcast from the bottom of a well, so I don't know why this would be any worse.
Yeah, that was kind of the joke there, is that you're always on a line and people always comment about that. Yeah, there we go. Let's get into some Xavier hoops talk. I apologize because I've been talking like for four straight days about Xavier basketball in various recordings. So I'm repeating myself a lot, and I understand that, and I hope you'll still listen. Xavier played an exhibition last Saturday, beat Division II Ferris State 80-56. Dan, you were there with a sugar-riddled child chasing them around, but also still saw some of the game, I heard. What was the big takeaway? Anything?
I was watching with rapt attention on a possession-by-possession basis, charting tendencies and really trying to get inside the head of Chris Mack as he put the offense through its paces for the first time this year. And what I would say is that it was kind of Edmund Sumner's show. A lot of the skill set that he's going to be – that he's showcased a little bit last year, and he's expected to – showcase all of this season was out in force. He had a couple spectacular dunks, a couple nice dishes, and ran the show pretty effectively. So I think that was the big takeaway. Obviously, JP filled it up in relatively limited minutes. We can talk about what I thought. Do you want me to say what I thought the negative or questionable part of it was?
I'd love to. So first of all, what the hell is going on over there, Snow? Are you like making dinner or something? Are we keeping you from dishes?
Dan's making noise. I don't know what the heck he's doing.
Dan, is that you making noise?
Yeah, I'm on my headphones. So. He can't hear you talking.
Oh, that had to be. That had to be Brian. Anyway, Dan, yes, tell us what your negatives were.
No, not Dan.
The big men were you.
Dan, tell us your negatives from the game.
I don't think it's possible for a podcast to get canceled, but if it is, this one is going to get canceled.
What is going on over there, Snow?
Dude, it's my brother. It's not my fault.
Okay, all right. Okay, Dan, back to you.
I'm a professional and try to exclude other persons from the room in which I'm recording the podcast because I care about the listener's experience. Nevertheless, to me, the biggest problem or the biggest concern that arose from the Ferris State game was that the Xavier big men were just not very good. And part of this was that the referees were pulling their typical exhibition game BS of calling every touch a foul and running up like 150 fouls in the first half and just making everyone just frustrated and angry. But obviously both O'Meara and Gaston had a little bit of trouble, which you wouldn't expect against an undersized and, scrappy lunch pail group of big men for Ferris State. And Tyreek Jones played a little bit too. He had some impressive moments, but he threw up some of the ugliest foul shots I've ever seen. So I think that the play of the big men was not particularly good in this game. That is a question mark coming into this season because we've never seen Rasheed Gass, or at least I've never seen Rasheed Gass to play a minute of Division I basketball. And Sean O'Meara was the third big man last year. Tyreek Jones, of course, a freshman. So that seems like it's a little bit of a work in progress.
Yeah, and I think actually you brought up kind of a good point that I haven't hit on all week when talking about how bad the big men were. The foul point is a good one. You know, you get that they're calling every touch foul in the preseason. They'll do it in the first few games of the non-conference. By the time we get back to conference season, they'll be back to the status quo. But nevertheless, it seems like this always happens. And I also think – I was talking about this with Andy Mack earlier today. I think sometimes it helps to actually have that bigger – more physical body to lean on and push back. Like, that's what you go against every day in practice when you're in a high major Division I program, and then you play against a bunch of Division II stiffs, and it's not quite the same. And for whatever reason, the big men were just awful. But, of course, in the Georgia game, they actually played really well, you know, better than the coaches kind of expected, I think. So you balance those out. You weigh with what I've seen in practice. I don't think it's a huge concern. But at the same time, they certainly have to prove something going forward. Last Saturday was an awful showing for them. Particularly, you know, Sean O'Mara, let's face it, like, he's getting the opportunity to start. He's got exactly what he's wanted. It's a big opportunity for him. He has to show up to play, and he has to show he can defend a little bit too without fouling. We saw a lot of 1-3-1, especially in the first half when they got in foul trouble. We saw a lot of playing two bigs together with Rashid Gaston sliding to the four. And even at times they played Tyreek Jones at the five and put Sean O'Mara at the four. Most of the time was in the 1-3-1. Dan, Brian, you can jump in on this too. What kind of any thoughts about how much of that type of stuff we're going to see while Kaiser Gates is still out here in the early going of the non-conference season?
That's what's going to be interesting, is I don't think they love the 1-3-1 with this personnel, just because what made it as effective as it was excuse me, I went full Brendel there, was you know, James and Jalen's length in it. So now you're losing that, even though, you know, Rashid Gaston's, you know, pretty big and Sean's pretty big, they're still not as big and as long as Jalen and James were when you would put them out there together. So I don't think you cover as much ground in the 1-3-1. So I don't think the staff is super excited about playing it this year, though they know they're going to have to due to foul trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it was effective against Ferris State, but that's because Ferris State's a bad basketball team. They couldn't hit the broadside of a barn from behind the arc. They had nothing in their golf bag to beat that zone or to even attack that zone. So they ran around like a bunch of chickens with their heads cut off. That will not happen when Xavier plays good teams, obviously, this year, unless it's a team that just is uniquely susceptible to 1-3-1 the way Providence was the last couple of years. So, I mean, it was probably more useful than anything just to actually play it in live action and see how it went, get these guys a little bit of a refresher of how it feels to play the 1-3-1 against a team that doesn't know exactly what they need to do to attack it. In that way, it's kind of like how Boeheim at Syracuse used to always have his team there was a period of time where Boeheim would have his team always play man-to-man in their exhibition, even though they never play it during the regular season. I think one year they lost to, like, Lemoyne at the Carrier Dome or something. It's kind of an emergency situation, and you do it. Kind of like how Cal, you know, brought in a team that really had that really was willing to play an up-tempo style, so he could get his team used to posterizing 5-6 stiffs up 100 points in the last 30 seconds of the game.
That game was hilarious. I've already talked about it, so I won't get into it. But I was dying laughing, thinking about just all the different things going on in that 100-point blowout.
Well, Moeller High School would have been favored in that game over whatever team that Kentucky was playing.
Yeah, Asbury. You're probably right about that. I would agree. Except Moeller could only score 30 points, and Asbury was running gun, so no. Zing! Yes! GCL South still
but
got
Asbury
it.
Asbury shot 7 of 49 from 3, so I'm not really concerned about them getting to 30.
Put up like 60 against UK. Moeller won't score 60 if you let them have it. Anyway, I think you guys both bring up good points about the 1-3-1, although, Brian, your point about the length of the big men is a good one. At the same time, you still have a 6'6 Edmund Sumner, you have a J.P. McCurry, you have a Trayvon Blewett. None of those guys have proven to be good defenders, although I think Edmund could be one this season, hopefully, for Xavier. But they all kind of – it's a way to kind of hide them. And in, like, Edmund and JP's case last year, it was a way to kind of accentuate their best attributes on the defensive end. So I still think because of that, it will be an effective defense at times. It'll be an effective changeup. And like you said, they will have to use it if they get into foul trouble. What about the two big men look for this team, Dan? I don't know how much you were paying attention to the rotations, but did you, it's hard to tell against a Ferris State, but do you like that look at all from what we were seeing? Or do you think that's going to, to me, it's not my favorite, I guess is what I would say. I think they're much better Malcolm or Trayvon at the four.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think what it boils down to is when I look at a lineup, I kind of am becoming more and more of a convert to this idea of positionless basketball, and I kind of judge a lineup by how good the five guys are on the floor. And I just really don't think a lineup with both O'Mara and Gaston would be is Xavier with their best five on the floor, even with the depleted roster right now. And they just don't look natural doing it. And they haven't looked natural doing it for a long time, playing with two big men on the floor. I mean, I remember last year when X played, it was a late season game that they played like garbage, and I can't think of what it was, maybe Seton Hall. They had to play two big men for a period in the first half and were just completely lost. And I just don't think it works with the way this team sets up and wants to play, and particularly with the skill sets of the guys they have, with Malcolm and JP Edmund and Trayvon. It just is not a great look, and obviously when Kaiser is back as well.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes things just a lot more choppy, and they're at their best when they are just moving the ball around the perimeter, getting open looks, driving into the lane, and the two big seems to clog that up a little bit and slow down the ball movement. And plus, with this team, we don't know if those bigs can score at all at this point, you know, and taking two guys on the court at the time who can't score makes things puts a lot more pressure on those other three, which is you have Malcolm in the game who may not be a big-time scorer for this team, but really helps on the offensive end because of his ability to make plays and set up his teammates, and he can also score and get to the free throw line if you need him to. So I think, like we said, they're better off with playing the small ball with Trayvon or Malcolm at the four.
Rick, let me ask you this: since this is a banner week for angry white men, I'll ask the stereotypical angry white man question after watching that game. What the hell is up with the foul shooting, and what, if anything, can be done?
Well, I mean, you know, this isn't unusual, but Chris Mack had the guys shooting 200 free throws this morning before class every day. They were getting up at like 8 a.m. or whatever to come in and had sign-up times, and they all came in and shot 200 free throws. I know Shannon tweeted that earlier today, and people were excited to see it on Twitter.
He made them get up at 8 a.m.? Jesus. What a taskmaster.
Well, I mean, I don't know. That was like what she tweeted, I think, was that they came, started at 8 a.m. and went throughout the day, or went throughout the morning.
So if they were told to shoot 200, what are we putting the over-under at, 65?
I mean, this isn't luck. I mean, it's shooting free throws, and they probably have someone else counting them. I'm not imagining many of those guys are counting to 60 by themselves. So my guess is one of the managers is doing that, and they're just, when they're done, so they don't really care. That being said, this happens like pretty much every year at the beginning of the season. If they're not shooting 75-80% from the free throw line, Chris Mack is going to make them sign up to shoot a bunch more free throws and yell at them. They'll get a little bit better, but you know who's going to shoot well at the free throw line. The guy that is key is Malcolm, because I think he's going to get there a lot, and he's kind of, I'd say, sort of iffy at this point. But aside from him, I mean, Edmund, Trayvon, JP are going to shoot pretty well. The bigs probably aren't. Tyreek, if God forbid he ever gets at the line, we'll all pray and close our eyes and hope one goes in. But
I mean, he looked like he was firing the ball at the backboard out of a cannon.
It wasn't the best stroke I've ever seen from the line, but I don't think that's Tyreek's game.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
All right. Well, I think we've spent more time caring about that game than anybody who actually played in it. So let's do that.
Yeah. Let's do what do you want to do? Schedule? We go through the schedule game, win loss game.
Yeah, might as well.
Yeah, the people love the schedule game.
They love the win loss game, and this podcast is just absolutely in the gutter right now. So we need to do anything we can to pull it out. So we'll try this. All right, starting home against Lehigh, 7 p.m. Friday night. The season kicks off. Not an easy opener. Lehigh is going to be picked to win the Patriot, or they were picked to win the Patriot League, and I think they will win the Patriot League. They have the two-time reigning Patriot League Player of the Year in Tim Kempton, whose father was an NBA player. He's their big center. They've got a kid who's going to be their all-time assist leader about 10 games into the season. He's 5'11", jet quick point guard, the type of guy that gave Xavier a lot of trouble last year. Not an easy game. They have some shooters on the wing. They're not very deep. What do you guys got? Xavier, Lehigh.
Well, Lehigh beat Duke like 6 years ago, so that gives me a little bit of pause. I would say Xavier should beat Lehigh at home. I mean, they should. But it wouldn't surprise me if this was a little bit of a pain of a game. I mean, maybe I'm thinking back at that Western Michigan game on the opening night a few years back where the dude missed the three that would have tied it at the buzzer. I could see this being a 2 or 3 possession game. X just looked kind of rusty against Ferris State. That could just be this team and sort of their sort of turn it on when it matters mentality. But it wouldn't surprise me if this is a single digit game, but Xavier win.
Xavier by 19.
Oh, snow coming strong. I like it. Yeah, Xavier wins, but I think this is a difficult game, and ball screen defense is going to be key. If they can't keep that little guard out of the lane, it could be a long night for them. So I guarantee you Lehigh is going to be testing Sean O'Mara and Rashid Gaston in their ball screen defense. Buffalo, Monday night, November 14th, 7 p.m. tip. Again, Xavier playing at home, guys, this time against a MAC opponent. What do you think?
Buffalo is, you know, they lost their best player to transfer to Western Kentucky for cost of attendance reasons. And
that's better than the white euphemism game. That's a really good one. That's a really good one. Might have just got the show back on track. Well done.
And so they're not quite the juggernaut that they were when Xavier scheduled them, but they're still one of the better teams in the MAC. So I actually think this could be like a 10-12 point game, but I do think the Musketeers come out on top.
Snow, what do you think of Rick Stansbury at Western Kentucky?
I think he's really good at what he does.
Okay. Dan, your turn.
X by 15.
All right, I like it too. X rolls in that one. I think after they get through that tough game against Lehigh, they're going to roll, win that game by about 25. Then they're going to Orlando, open up with Missouri. What do you guys got for this Orlando tournament?
I think Kim Anderson should probably stay in his casket.
Missouri is trash, but I've seen enough opening games of Xavier exempt tournaments to know that score with like 2 minutes left in the first half of this game is going to be like 19-12. And so I think X wins by double digits, but it's one of those experiences that it's one of those things where everybody wishes they had the 2 hours back.
Yeah, that doesn't sound off, Dan. I mean, that is kind of how they open these tournaments up. That being said, Missouri is probably the second worst team other than Eastern Washington that Xavier is going to play in the non-conference this year. So I think Xavier ends up pulling away and winning this one eventually. Do either of you know who they'd play in the second round? Because I don't have the bracket up right now. I'm working to pull it up.
Most likely Clemson.
All right. So what do you think? Let's just finish off the tournament. What do you think they do?
I'll say this. I think Clemson's the second best team besides Xavier in the tournament. So I think that's going to be a really tricky game, especially because Clemson's an older team. They're, you know, a mature team. They're going to defend. That said, Xavier's just more talented at the end. I don't know if Clemson and Jerron Blossom game will be able to beat them. So I'll go with the Musketeers winning it.
I think they might split the second and third games in this tournament. I mean, they have a little bit of a short bench. You know, we talked a little bit about some of the struggles the big men have had. I could see them dropping a game. And, in fact, it wouldn't really surprise me if they dropped a game in Orlando. They're not going to lose to Missouri, but I think one of these other two games they will possibly take an L.
Dan, I agree.
Could be Northern Iowa in the championship. I mean,
likely Oklahoma, probably, you know, in the championship, probably be Oklahoma.
Yeah, so on the bottom of the bracket, it's Northern Iowa versus Arizona State, Tulane, Oklahoma. So you're going to get Northern Iowa, Oklahoma in the semifinals there. Either one of those teams would be a pretty good test in the finals. And like you said, Clemson is a good semifinals test for Xavier, assuming they beat Davidson. That's not a guarantee, although I don't think Davidson's very good this year. They still have one of the best players in their conference. So I will go Xavier loses to Clemson and then wins that third consolation game in the tournament. So they would be at 3-1 at that point, I would have them.
4-1.
Okay, 4-1. Coming back home to face – that's pretty good math by me. I'm more of a sabermetrics guy. Coming back home to face Northern Iowa on Saturday at noon. What do you got? Northern Iowa, again, tough game. Both teams are going to be coming back from that tournament. Northern Iowa having to play on the road, though.
Wait, is this where we would think that Kaiser Gates maybe could make his return around this time?
Yeah, and I mean, to be quite honest, they're saying he's around 2 weeks out. But again, when they give you a hard 4 week deadline, that kind of makes you think he may be back a little sooner than that. So it's not, I don't think it's impossible that he plays in the tournament. Would you agree, Snow?
Yeah, I think they're almost expecting him for the tournament.
Okay, interesting.
And when do we expect Miles Davis back?
Not now.
Yeah, and end of the first semester is still what I'm guessing based on what I was told. And again, no one in the program is officially going to confirm that to me, so I can't say it with 100% certainty, but I had two pretty good sources that, told me about
the games.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think they beat Northern Iowa. I'll say probably a close game, probably, 4, 5, 6 points, but I think they'll hold serve at home.
All right, and then the next game is a couple days later, Tuesday night, 6:30 p.m., tip-off against North Dakota State at the Cintas Center. That game is on FS1. Who you got?
I don't believe – what are they, the Jackrabbits maybe?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think they'll take an L. I think Xavier – I still have the Mighty Musketeers undefeated.
They're the Bison, by the way.
Whatever.
What's South Dakota State's the Jackrabbits? Maybe?
Yeah, South Dakota State Jackrabbits, I believe.
Okay.
Why do we need two Dakotas? I mean, it's just a complete overkill.
Someone's got to get the electoral votes for Trump. I mean, damn.
No, consolidate them into one Dakota and bring in Puerto Rico. You don't even have to add a state. But anyway, seriously, folks. I think that Xavier will win, even though the game starts at 6:30, which I hate.
Yeah, Dan is not a fan of the 6:30 p.m. to tip off. Not enough time to get lubricated or what?
I mean, look, I'm not going to tell you that's not part of it. But also, it just half the crowd isn't there at tip off. Certainly not everyone is in the appropriate posture at the national anthem, which, Rick, as you know, really drives me nuts. One of my pet peeves. That and people who sit and people sitting on the scorers table during play. That's also
huge issue on last year's team.
Sometimes when the guys have their shirts untucked and they enter the game, that also is a little bit bothersome. But the 6:30 tip offs. I mean, how are we supposed to appropriate? How is the crowd supposed to be in an appropriate state of inebriation and excitement at 6:30 p.m.?
That's a fair point, especially when you're playing the Bison and they don't have that fat dude that they had a couple years ago in the tournament that was balling. He was so electric to watch. Yeah, Xavier beats North Dakota State. We got to move on. Keep this thing rolling. December 3rd, they are traveling, starting the toughest portion of their non-conference schedule, going at Baylor, 3:30 p.m. tip on ESPN2. Guys, I'm actually interested to hear your answer finally. What do you think about this one?
Well, I'm going to morph it into one. I would say win at Baylor, loss at Colorado. But I think Xavier splits this two-game trip. With Baylor, I just think they've lost a lot from last year's team. I think they're solid. I don't think they're great. Colorado, my feeling is you go up to altitude, tough trip. Colorado's a good team, well-coached, good atmosphere.
Plus
so I'm gonna take
legalization.
They won't be there long enough for that to be an impact.
We'll edit that part.
I don't know, but if there's any three-game suspensions that come down immediately after the game, I think we know why.
Or concussions, I'll tell you what. Okay. I agree with exactly what you said, but I do think, Baylor and Colorado preseason predictions, you got them probably pretty close, somewhere outside the top 25 and between 25 and 50, but they're fairly similar teams, I think, in a fairly similar spot. I think Colorado is a little bit better, a little bit more experienced. And like you said, going to altitude, big deal. People forget that 9 p.m. tip at Colorado on second game on the road. I think that's the one they lose. Dan, did you say what you think they do at Colorado?
I agree with both of you.
In a roundabout way, he did.
Okay.
I think they might be a little lethargic.
Okay. December 10th, they return home to this is, all of this starts on the 3rd, that trip to Baylor. You come home on the 10th, 7 days later, all within a week, you're playing that third game at home against Utah, 5:30 p.m. tip, scheduled to be on Fox National. What do you think about that one?
Jakob Poeltl's not with Utah, so I'm going to take Xavier at home, despite that being the west-to-east travel. I think that west-to-east travel will also be tough for the mighty Utes. So I'm going to have the Musketeers rolling and getting another win.
Unless the Utah coach summons the spirit of Rick Majerus and poops in a towel in front of his team immediately before the game, I expect the Musketeers to beat the running Utes at Cintas Center. And I think that this is about the time when Xavier is going to be starting to hit their stride a little bit, because Gates will be back fully integrated into the team. They'll be used to playing. They'll be used to the rotation. The big man hopefully will have gotten up to speed with the rest of the guys. And I think this is when you're going to start to see Xavier really start rounding into midseason form at that point.
I like it. Dan coming strong on the Utah take. I actually agree with you there. I think there's no chance, if I've got them losing at Colorado, no chance they lose two in a row. They're going to beat Utah at the Cintas Center. And I'll tell you what, if they do not hit their stride in this game, as you're predicting, they certainly will in the next one. They have a week practice in between that Utah game and the Wake Forest game. Everyone should feel pretty healthy with a little extra rest, finally getting back from that tough road trip. You play Wake Forest in the Skip Prosser Invitational, 8 p.m. That game's going to be on FS1. What do you got?
Wake Forest still isn't very good. And until they're very good, they're not coming into Cintas and winning. Xavier victory.
Yeah, I mean, this will win. Yeah, well, and this could be the return of Miles Davis, which could mean, you know, Xavier finally at full strength this season with Davis and Gates back, assuming no injuries, touch wood.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, Xavier will roll over Wake Forest. He'll finish like 13th or 14th in the ACC this year, although it's pretty loaded, so it's not the worst thing. December 20th, Tuesday, they will take on Eastern Washington at 6:30, and this is the worst team they'll face in the non-conference, so we'll all have them winning, I would assume. So were you guys keeping track of how many losses you had there?
Yeah, I only have one.
Wait, Eastern Washington is the alma mater of John Kitna.
So they'll wear cross hats into the arena?
No, I just wanted you to know that people forget that.
Oh, yeah, they do. They do forget that. I agree.
Shockingly, they do, yes.
Yeah, Xavier's non-conference record, I've got them 11-2 losses, one coming in Orlando and at Colorado. Do you guys know what you had?
I have covered the final game.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. That's bad part on me, bad journalism. January 26th, in the middle of conference play, Thursday night, they go to the Shoemaker Center, Fifth Third Arena, 7 p.m. tip-off for the Crosstown Shootout. Bunch of gangsters in the locker room. What do you think?
I think there'll be gangsters in the locker room and tough guys on the court. However, that's going to be in between Georgetown and St. John's. I just don't think Xavier comes away with it this year. Miles Davis's dream of making Xavier history squashed. Bearcats win.
Wow, bad take, Dan.
Is that actually Miles's dream? Is he even aware of that?
I'm sure he doesn't have the slightest of ideas.
But like 150 fans on message boards do, so I'm pretty sure it's his dream, Dan.
Okay, I don't know. I defer until until we start picking the conference games. Because if they're going to play a stupid non-conference game in the middle of the conference play, I can't be expected to come up with some sort of justification for why they're going to win or lose without knowing the other meaningless BS that I've already said about their other January games. Bad form by UC. Quit playing in a poop conference and quit trying to compensate for your garbage fart of a conference by scheduling the Crosstown Shootout in the middle of January.
I disagree. I disagree with that take. I love it later in the season.
Yeah, me too. I think Dan should be kicked off the podcast.
Two huge reasons why I like it later in the season. One, because it's after college football, so like people actually know the game's going on when it happens. So it seems like there's a little more hype around it. Two, the fact that we know where both teams are at that point. I mean, by January 26th, the teams are what they are. On December 2nd or 3rd, or you know, they've played it early in December sometimes. It they're still rounded into shape, and a lot of times it seems like the team who loses the game goes on and has the better year to finish off. So I like it coming late in January. We know where they're at. It's a much truer representation of both teams, in my opinion.
I liked it when they played it last year, which was the first Saturday. I think it was the same Saturday as Army-Navy, but that was the only college football game that was on that
week. It was December the 12th last year.
I think December the 12th is late enough in the year to provide a pretty good signpost for both teams. And I just frankly, now that Xavier's in the Big East, I don't like them having to step out of Big East play and prepare for a very intense crosstown rivalry that means a lot to the fans, and the fans would want to see Xavier like at their best in that game, and then have to turn around and play like 48 hours later again while Chris Mullen is gulping Perrier and
swinging his feet on the scorer's table
and untucking his shirt. I mean, it just is. I think the last time Xavier played this during the conference schedule, they took an L during that week. They had to play three games in 5 days, I want to say, because of how tight they had to schedule all the games. I think that was when they went out to St. John's and blew a big lead in the second half and lost. So after beating UC and Butler, I think, that week. So, yeah, I mean, I think both your takes are garbage on this, and you should be ashamed.
Do you think that St. John's loss had more to do with Dom Pointer being far and away the best player on the court, or with the fact that 6 days earlier they played Cincinnati?
I think it had the most to do with the fact that Remy Abel was basically stabbed on his way to the basket scoring the winning points. And the referees made one of the great – this is one of those things that, Snow, you always go completely ballistic on Twitter, and I love it every time because you're right, is when the refs miss an obvious foul, so they give the team the ball, even though there is no replay on God's green earth that shows the guy that fouled him touching the ball. It's fantastic, especially when they go to replay and they still come up with this crazy makeup call. I think everyone knows what you're doing. Just say it.
So Dan, is that a win or a loss at Cincinnati?
I told you, I've declined a state at this time.
Oh, okay. Not how the win-loss game works.
I abstain.
Well, we're not going through the conference games one by one, are we? So, like, how are we going to know what your final non-conference prediction is?
Of course we will. We always go through the conference games
one by one. Let's go to the conference.
Okay. I've got Xavier winning at Cincinnati. I, honest to God, believe that this game is in Mick Cronin's head. His game plan has been absolute trash the last few years against the Xavier team, and I think Xavier's more talented. And you combine those two things, I think he tries to overcompensate again and comes up with some silly defensive game plan, and Xavier just has guys that live for this. Like, J.P. McKira is probably going to put 25 on him this year. That's just the way that
game works. Well, yeah, and after the game, Mick Cronin will complain that J.P. McKira hit shots in that game that he never hit before in his life,
yeah,
which is just demonstrably untrue, but...
Yeah,
I mean, that's sort of the way this always goes.
Okay, so
hashtag demonstrably.
I've got Xavier 11-2 in the non-conference. Snow, you have them at 10-3.
No, I only have them with two losses.
Okay, 11-2, and Dan has not told us.
I have Xavier winning 10 games. Their opponents winning 2, and Harambe 1.
Okay. All right. Starting conference play December 28th. It's a Wednesday. They're going to be home.
No, we're not going through all this. We go through all this with Tift when we do the Big East.
Later in the season. What the? You're all over the place tonight.
I am not. I am the only person on this podcast that remembers what we did last year.
That's true. I had no idea how we did it last year, and I was leaning on you, and you kept assuming I would remember at some point, I think, and I was taking you literally. So there we go. So you're just not going to give us a prediction at all.
I would think a professional that's appeared on like 17 different forms of media today talking about Xavier basketball would maintain his level of professionalism for this the flagship podcast of MusketeerReport.com.
That would not be how we do this podcast. That's not how we get down. Snow, we'll give predictions then. I've got them 11-2 in non-conference. I'm going to say they go 15-3 in conference and finish 26-5. What's your overall prediction for the season?
I'm saying 13-5 in conference to finish 24-7.
And Dan, we'll just hear from you before conference play starts. You're going to make a midseason prediction for us?
I think I'm closer to where snow is, but yeah.
So you're thinking more like 6 or 7 losses then?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that the last year Xavier got kind of lucky a couple times in non-conference. They won some games that maybe they, under normal circumstances, wouldn't have, particularly the Wake Forest game. I mean, when you're down to 18 points with 18 minutes left, it's not a huge percentage that you're going to come back and win. And, I don't see them going – I don't know that they're going to go 14-4. I mean, you do 14-4 again or 15-3. I mean, that takes a level of excellence that is pretty – is going to be very difficult with some of the road trips they have in this league.
No yeah, question.
And they're not a national championship contender like Villanova is, who could legitimately go out win six and go 16-2.
I mean, Xavier does have to go to DePaul. We know that's going to be tough. So,
well,
you know, trips.
Well, not there, so that.
Yep.
I mean,
that's a fact. DePaul is finishing 10th this year. You don't have Tommy Hamilton. You're not winning the conference like you probably should have. That's just how it is.
Hashtag nice.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is right, Dan. I mean, it's not easy to do what they did last year and go 12-0 in non-conference. I mean, that's not likely to happen again. And honestly, I feel less confident in saying this 11-2 than I think that's what I predicted last year was something like that as well. And I feel more confident in last year's prediction than I do this year's. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they started out 9-4 in the non-conference. So.
Well, and part of it last year was we expected them to play Wichita State and Notre Dame, both of whom were nationally ranked in the exact tournament, and they ended up playing USC and just kicking the absolute crap out of them. And then Chris Mack trolled Dayton into a 30-point loss. So, I mean, a couple things broke their way last year as well. So, I mean, I think 11-2. If they go 11-2, including a win at UC and a win at Baylor. Home win over Utah, and then probably a couple more top 100 wins in Orlando, or at least one more in Orlando. That's pretty good. It might get them in a similar place they were last year, given the strength of the teams that were on their non-conference schedule last year.
Yeah, I would say I don't think Xavier has a schedule where no outside of going undefeated, which is not going to happen. I don't think they have a schedule where they can get a number one seed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, they're going to lose games. They're not, they're not only going to have two losses at the end of the season.
Yeah, if they went 29-2, you know, realistically, because they're not going to have a lot of those like elite wins that you need to get a number one seed, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a 2-3 is very much in play again for this year's team.
Absolutely.
I think a top 4 seed is.
It should be the expectation for this team.
It should be the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that should be – that's about par. I think a 3 or 4 seed would be about par. And as we saw last year, you know, you get a bad matchup and you can go out early, and that's true whatever seed line you're on. But,
I actually don't think they got a bad matchup.
It wasn't a great matchup, though. And obviously that night, more importantly, Wisconsin was good.
It was a bad matchup that night.
Yeah, but. Yeah. So, no, I think both of you are pretty right on with your takes on all of this. With the Big East Conference, I mean, I know, Dan, we will have Doug Tift on to talk before conference play gets underway, but do you guys have any thoughts to stand out about the Big East this year? I mean, I think it's very clearly Villanova, Xavier 1-2, and then to me, Creighton's clearly third. Any other takes on that?
After that, it's a mess.
Yep.
Like,
but I think it's solid. I think it's a solid mess. Like, everyone has a chance to be pretty decent.
It's not bad. It's just, like, what order are they going to – I mean, Seton Hall's still going to be good. I saw Butler. They're different, but they're good. Then, you know, St. John's is going to be the most improved team in the league. Marquette can really score. You know, they beat Dayton in their super secret didn't-happen scrimmage, and Dayton's a top 25 caliber team. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of good teams in the Big East. But how it's going to shake out in that muddled middle, so to speak. Will Georgetown not repeat whatever debacle they put forth last year? I mean, there's a lot of questions to answer, but it's going to be really interesting in that middle.
I'll believe Wojo can beat Xavier when I see it. That's just how I feel. I think Xavier loses at Villanova, at Creighton, and one other game, probably like at Seton Hall, because they never play well there.
Do you think Wojo will use your run-in with him at the Big East tournament last year to motivate his team before the game in Cincinnati? Like maybe have a picture of your face on the team bulletin board?
Yeah, I think that's likely. I think that's likely, yeah.
I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
Respect. Disagree.
I think that this is, by some distance, the worst episode we've ever recorded of the show.
I don't know what happened. I'm mush right now. I'll admit, I've been going since 9 a.m. doing nothing but Xavier basketball. I've recorded like 3 hours of content already, just audio, this week. I do suck right now. I can't help that, but I don't know why you guys are so bad, too.
I've got an explanation. I was never, I'd rather not go there.
I was never good to begin with.
Okay. Fair enough. You just want to put this out of its misery then?
Let's do it.
All right. You've been listening to another edition of the Data Victory Podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Dan and the legend Brian Snow. I even screwed that up. I can't even get my words right. For the legend Brian Snow and Dan, I'm Rick. We'll see you later.